Okay. The number one issue we really should explain, and we'll get back to it towards the end if we go full circle, is the special significance of Purim during a leap year. All right, it's not for naught that Adar, you know, which is the month of Purim, is the one that gets doubled in order to equalize, you know, the solar cycle with the lunar cycle. It is innately connected for Purim to Purim, as we will explain. Now, it's well known, it's a Tikkunei Zohar, that Yom Kippurim is a Yom Kippurim. It's Yom Kippur, almost as holy as Purim. And there's a lot that about these two holidays that, on the one hand, they're inverses of each other, total inverses. Right? That the Yom Kippur, we prepare for it by, you know, eating on the 9th of Tishrei. Right? It's a mitzvah to eat all day. Right? And we fast on Yom Kippur itself. Right, 24-hour fast, and Purim is the exact opposite. We fast Tanis Esther in preparation for Purim, and Purim is a day of eating. It's something that needs. We have to look into this a little bit, understand this. It's how they're like inverses of each other. Now, there are two things that they have in common. One thing that they have in common in the same way, all right, is that Chazal tell us there's a, you know, that. You know, there is one Lashon Chazal. There's the well-known one that everyone agrees to, that in the future, all the Yomim Tovim that we know are going to be annulled, and the one Yom Tov that we will keep is Purim. There is that is in Chazal, and the Rambam brings it. The Rambam brings it again in Vilchos Megillah. This is halacha. This is understood to be normative Judaism, that we believe in the future, the Moados will be in this battle, except for Purim. But there is another Lashon Chazal, that there's one other exception to this, and that's Yom Kippur. So we'll have in the future Yom Kippur and Purim, which is another further common denominator between the two that we would like to explore. But then there's how they're similar in a dissimilar type of way, right? These two holidays break the golden rule, right? The golden rule that's true for all holidays. And true, central to Judaism itself, and that's literally the golden mean. So the Rambam speaks about this at great length, that Judaism preaches the golden path, the middle way, not to be extreme, not in one way and not the other way. And he explains that the way halacha is structured, you know, halacha prohibits certain things and allows other things, and if you would view the halacha as a whole, you'll see it preaches a balanced lifestyle. Nothing is totally usher, nothing is totally mutter, right? And it's in everything that we do. And we know, a person shouldn't afflict themselves and deny the body what it needs. And that's why the nazir, for example, one of the karbonis that he brings when he finishes nazir, is an osham. Now, osham is a type of sin offering. So the Gemara says, "Be al shetzir atzvo min hayayin." You know, he needs atonement for denying himself wine. Right? Wine is something that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants people to have. It used to be a staple item. Right? And of course, overindulgence is also asceticism is considered to be wrong, and overindulgence is wrong, and we have to go down the middle path. And interestingly enough, our Yomim Tovim are structured that way. There's a halacha learnt out of Psukim, because one pasuk says Atzeres LaShem Elokecha, another pasuk says Atzeres Tzie Lachem. So we reconcile to say Chetzio LaShem, Chetzio Lachem, and that's the halacha in Hilchos Yom Tov. Right, in Rambam and in Shulchan Aruch, that you're supposed to divide the day of Yom Tov into half. Right, the way to theoretically do it right is to daven netz, and then after davening, learn all the way until Chatzos, daven mincha, and then party. That's the way around. Party for the rest of the day till nightfall, and that's the way it's brought down in the Rambam. That's it's supposed to be 50-50. Chetzio LaHashem, Chetzio Lachem. Like Judaism itself, that everything is supposed to be in a balance, half-half, right? Walk that tight wire, right? And here we have Yom Kippur, that it's these, and Purim, that they're off on extremes, right? know, Yom Kippur is a day how like the body gets nothing. There's no lochem on Yom Kippur. And seemingly, if we wouldn't know better, and we'll have to explain how, there's almost no Lahashem on Purim, right? So now the Vilna Gaon addresses this, and he says something very interesting that needs a greater observation. And he says, well, you have to look at the year as a whole, right? And really look at Yom Kippur and Purim as two halves of the same day, right? So the Yom Kippur was the Chetzio LaHashem, and the Purim was the Chetzio Lachem. You know what is that? So in the grand picture, cosmically, it balances out. All right, and that's something which we'll have to analyze a little bit more. There's more to it than just the cute idea. So going back to, so we mentioned that Vilna Gaon, let's mention another Vilna Gaon, that... and he's also going on this idea of, you know, Purim and Yom Kippurim, you know, and the common denominator between the two. And I remember we mentioned this in previous years. We know that the lunar cycle is 10 days shorter than the solar cycle. The lunar cycle, let's round it up to 355 days, Gematria Shana, 355. All right. We know that the solar cycle is 365 days. So the Vilna Gaon points out something very interesting. So when the new year comes in on Rosh Hashanah, now Rosh Hashanah is the first of Tishrei. So it's the new year on the lunar cycle, but the solar cycle lags behind by 10 days. Right? So something interesting about Aseres Yemei Teshuva is that it's a twilight zone, because on the lunar cycle, it's the new year. On the solar cycle, it's still last year, because the solar cycle still makes a whole revolution, it's 10 days shorter. Right? The day that it catches up is on Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur is where now the solar cycle is caught up. Right? And so therefore explains the Vilna Gaon. That's why you could still make up for last year during the Aseres Yemei Teshuva, because it's not fully the next year yet. So it's in between. It's part last year, and that's why you could still make amends, right, during the Aseres Yemei Teshuva, right? And that process is finalized in Yom Kippur. That's when the gates are closed, because the solar cycle has caught up to the lunar cycle. Now it's fully next year, you know, so last year is gone. There's no fixing it anymore. But also on the positive, there's an idea, which we're going to explain more in detail, that when the two cycles catch up, that's called reconciliation, right? And that's called, as it were, healing, whatever's wrong, whatever rifts there are in our lives. And we'll discuss this more in just a minute. But he goes on to say something else. You know, we have, you know, so the Aseres Yemei Teshuva, those are the days of discrepancy between the two cycles, because the new year came in, you know, 10 days earlier, you know, with the lunar cycle, and 10 days later with the solar cycle. On the average, we have a leap year to reconcile that the two cycles shouldn't, you know, deviate too much, and Pesach come out in the winter. Right? So every third year, on the average, is a leap year. So right, we add 30 days of Adar Sheni, right, to balance things out. Right, the 30 days, every 3 years, to make up for the 30-day discrepancy that accumulates in the course of 3 years. So he says an amazing thing. Three sets of Aseres Yemei Teshuva produce Adar Sheni. So it's, yeah, it's something amazing to think about. It means the whole Adar Sheni was made out of Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Three sets of Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Those three, which are the days of discrepancy. Those are the 30 days of Adar Sheni. All right, so before we go into all this, let's just raise a few more questions. We have to make things worse before we make them better. There's something about Amalek that we don't have with all our other enemies. The guy just won't go away. He just won't. Right, Muhammad Hashem ba'Amalek mi-dor-dor was foretold from the first war already. We're just going to have to keep on dealing with him till the end of time. It almost makes you wonder why Purim is even legit. We're not done with him. You know, Pesach is legit, we're done with the Egyptians. Hanukkah is legit, we're done with the Greeks, right? You know, et cetera, et cetera. This guy won't go away. He keeps on coming back. Why is that? You know, and if he keeps on coming back, so what really does Purim mean? Yeah. So now, there's something about, you know, also this, our war with Amalek, that there's a concept of, you know, Tunis. First of all, you know, in the very, very first war with him, right? So it was fought on 2 levels. Moshe Rabbeinu had his hands up, and Yoshua with the sword. So which we didn't have in our confrontation with all our other enemies. We have to have Moshe with his hands up, reminding us that everything is min hashamayim, and Yoshua with the sword. And why was that necessary? And if that was necessary, what supplements from Moshe Rabbeinu that role in future wars with Amalek? Right, like we had in Days of Shoal. Like there's a who's the figure with the hands up? And then there's the there's that Tunis, but there's also the very fact that, you know, Purim, you know, is another thing that makes it break rank with all the other holidays, that there are 2 days of Purim, not Misofik, Bavadai, Purim the Prozim and Purim the Mukafim. There's Purim for these people and Purim for these people. Right, it's not. So we don't have such a, by the other holidays. It's if we keep 2 days Yom Tov, it's just because we have a Suffolk and Chutzarts, which day is the real? No, over here, no. There's Purim for the Prozim, there's Purim for the Mukafim, and Esther was, you know, she wanted this, you know, she steered her. She nothing. She asked, "What did the king ask her? What do you want?" That you nothing. I want one more day for Jews in Shushan, and that's what made Shushan Purim. This was like by design. They wanted to steer directly into this, that Purim should be, you know, 2 days. Right? It comes out in this month of Mazal Dagim, you know, plural, fish, right? Multiple. Right? So now the Gemara says something very interesting, that when Haman threw the lots, right, and it came up on Adar, right? So it came up on Adar, he was overjoyed. Right? This is unbelievable. Right? It says, you know, Adar, day Moshe Rabbeinu died. And Mar says that he forgot about the fact Moshe Rabbeinu was born then also. All right, so he sees one side of the picture, when there's another side. And same thing, he says, Mazel Dugim, fish swallow. I'm going to swallow the Jewish people. Right? Yeah, so, but he said, fish swallow and get swallowed. You're not the fish that's going to swallow, you're the fish that's going to get swallowed. Right? So it's very interesting. He sees just one side of the picture. And now, what is the lots that he threw? What's it called? Hippil Pur, who are grow for Haman. And what's the holiday called? Purim, Al Shema Pur. It should be called Pur. Either of us says it. Again, double, Purim. He sees Pur. He sees only one side. That's Purim. The idea is like this. You know, when Amalek came for the first time, it was after Am Yisrael was they were thirsty. Moshe Rabbeinu had to hit the rock and give them the water. So it says, you know, that it was called Masa Meriva Al Nasosim Hashem Leimor Hayesh Hashem Bekirbeinu Im Oyin. Right. They, as it were, they tested Hashem, and they asked, "Is Hashem in our midst or nothing?" Right. So, it doesn't say Yeshem Bekirbeinu Olo. Right? They didn't deny the existence of God. I mean, who just took them out of Egypt? Who just parted the Red Sea for them? Right? They just got water miraculously from a rock. Right? They weren't denying the existence of God. Right? So the Zohar says something very interesting. And he says, you know, the idea of, you know, yesh and ayin, right? These two terms that we talk about, yesh me ayin. Now, Kosher created the world, you know, yesh, what is, me'ayin, out of nothing. Right? You know, the term me'ayin means out of nowhere. Right? So he said, Esa einai me'el heharim, me'ayin yavo ezri. Right? From where will my help come? No, Ezri Mei Mashem, Osei Shemayim V'Aretz. If God could create heaven and earth, so he could create a solution for you. You don't see where the help is going to come from, but you know, if he could make heaven and earth, then he could also find a solution for whatever your predicament is. Right? When you're in a situation of ayin, right, you don't know where to turn, right? So there's only one thing to do: bitachon. Right? After everything's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And then there's something called yesh, right? Yesh is that, you know, what I'm able to do, you know, what's in my grasp, yesh, what I have, you know, I have the capacity to do something about the problem, and that's, you know, in other words, that's what we call hishtadlus, right? And there's a the perceived conflict between bitachon and hishtadlus. When do you have bitachon? When do you make hishtadlus, right? Which is it? You know, it would be easier if it would just be just one way, right? Just always have bitachon, right? Or just always make hishtadlus. And this is like what's most chagrining and frustrating is, you know, which when? Right? So, you know, Am Yisrael in the desert, you know, they were frustrated. You know, they didn't know. Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinim ayin. They're asking a very philosophical question, right? And that is, how are we supposed to cope? How are we supposed to conduct ourselves? You know, Hashem b'kirbeinim, Hashem is in our midst. That means that, you know, like Hashem, you know, will give you koach, right, to do and to accomplish and to fend for yourself. That's called Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinim. Hashem is in our midst, meaning we're doing and he's helping us. Obviously, we always need his help. You know, we're doing and he's helping. All right, im oyin, or it's like me'ayin yovo ezri. Right, you know, we cannot do anything. Right, we're totally out of control, and it's all a state of me'ayin yovo ezri. Ezri me'im Hashem osei shemayim v'aretz. That was their question. Right, but this question is, but the problem was, as the Zohar points out, they weren't asking, you know, as a inquisitive type of way. It wasn't, in the words of Zohar, ba'orach she'ela, you know, asking, you know, what should it be? How should we? It was ba'orach nisyona. It was in a way of al nasosam Hashem. They were testing, and they want to know, which is it? Is it this, or is it that? Right, like they decided that it has to be either or. Not true. That was their chet. They decided it has to be either or. Right? It's either yesh or ayin. Yesh or gerim ayin. It wasn't there. There was al nasosam. They wanted a test. They wanted a sign. Is it this way or that way? And that was their chet. Why does it have to be this way or that way? They're both true. The bitachon is true. The ishtadlus is true. And it's a sliding scale. You got to know when it's time for bitachon and when it's time for ishtadlus. That's, you know, challenges that there are in life. Right? It's what's complicated about life. Right? Now, this is all rooted, you know, let's take a step back where this all starts from. Because we have a lot of these things in life. You know, yesh and ayin are two general categories for all the different contradictions, seeming contradictions, that's the big mistake. The seeming contradictions that we contend with, that frustrate us. Right? There's the Yediyah Ubechira paradox, right? Of course, who knows the future? Of course, he knows the future. And that's, you know, there's a destiny, there's a plan. Well, if there's a destiny, if there's a plan, and he has it all figured out, so do I really have free will? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, yeah, there's you know, the Hishtalos and Bitochen, question that we mentioned. And really, it's also the body soul conflict, truth also, right? This is the tight wire that Judaism walks, that is hard, frustrating, and it's pretty boring. the balance, balance between the body and soul. You know, it's like that short blanket. You know, you cover your face, your feet are exposed, vice versa. Giving the body what it needs, giving the soul what it needs, and the examples go on and on. As there are two tracks that need to be reconciled, whether it's body and soul, yedim bechira, bitochen and hishtadlus. It's like two different trains running at two different speeds, and there's a route for all this. This God knew what he was doing. He did this on purpose, right? This is our big challenge, and the creation of tracks that run at two different speeds that have expressed all these multiple times. That was what he created purposely when he mitigated the moon, and made that cycle run differently than the solar cycle. That was the original creation of the idea that there are different tracks in reality, and you have to reconcile. But they're both real. They're both real. Right? It's not one or the other. They're both real, and then we're constantly working to reconcile them. And this is all rooted. The shurish for all this is the fact that the lunar cycle and the solar cycle don't run on the same speed. This was the original schism in reality that created, for all the different conflicts of these different tracks that need to be reconciled. So with this, you could already extrapolate and figure out that's the big, big tikkun of the Ibur, right? Of the lunar, of the leap year, of putting the tracks back together. But this is the this is the problem that there is. Right, the sun representing the body, right, and the moon representing the soul, right, that the soul runs way ahead of the body as far as, idealism and the right things to do, just like the lunar cycle runs ahead of the solar cycle, but the moon doesn't shine so brightly, right, the soul doesn't shine so brightly and, overcome us and overcome the world. It's all rooted over there. That's the big problem that creates chet, that creates sin. Now the word chet, has another meaning in Lashon Kodesh. It means to miss, like lahachti, right? Because the things are not aligned. You're not on target, right? The problem that creates sin, right, is the the fact that the different forces in reality all is meant for the good, but the different forces, they're not perfectly aligned, and there's conflicts of interest, and it goes create dilemmas, right? And that's where we fail, right? Even though all the different forces in reality were meant for the good, right? And that was the original thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to test us. Right, and to make life challenging, and we're going to have to make tough decisions, right, is that original misalignment between the sun and the moon, the misalignment between the body and soul, the misalignment between different concepts like bitochen and hishtadlus. It was all rooted there. Amalek likes that stuff. That's it creates the idea as if there's conflict. Right, and he thrives in that, in that space, in that gap between the two tracks. That's where in the idea, as if the two are not reconcilable. That's his and he has no principles. Evil has no principles. He doesn't, like any politician, switch sides. Whatever goes in, He'll switch from here to there, from there to here. He'll be a rightist, he'll be a leftist, whatever. you say, but it's a contradiction. Oh, who cares? He rides whichever train. He could get people on board for it, to go in his direction, right? if we'd close the gap between the tracks, he'd have no room to stand in reality. That's where he stands. He stands, as it were, the gap between the tracks. That area that's called Suffolk. That's why Amalek, Gematria, Suffolk. Right? We don't know how to reconcile these things. And that's where he is. And he'll tell you can't reconcile it. You can't. Irreconcilable. and you end up going off to one extreme. So now you can understand, you know, on a deeper level, on a much deeper philosophical level, the idea that Judaism preaches the golden mean of balance. Right? There's something very deep about it. It's not about being a boring individual. It doesn't do too much of anything. There is something very deep. I mean, that's the problem that needs to be reconciled. That seems boring. Right? And we'll talk about that. The idea of the balance, the golden mean, right, is to understand there's a deep philosophical message there. It's all emes. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this track and he created that track, they both have to be true. They both have to be emes. They both have to be l'tov. And therefore, I have to find a way to balance them. I have to reconcile them. And then that's the end. I guess if you have that type of cognizance in leading a balanced life, it'll be a little bit more exciting. You understand the tremendous tikkun that's being made, that you're trying to hold the different tracks of the cosmos together. Imagine two trains trying to get them to run at exactly the same speed. You know, and to, you know, work together. There's a very big tikkun in that. And that's why by no coincidence, as the Rambam points out, you know, evil is to be found in extremes. At extreme, you know, whether it's to the right, to the left, you know, misplaced kindness to an extreme where it gets misplaced, or misplaced, you know, judgment. Evil's in the extremes, the good is in that delicate balance, because the good is trying to hold everything together. Trying to, you know, get the two trains, you know, working at the same speed and working in the same direction. Right? Yeah, there'll come a time when that'll be exciting, as we'll discuss. But the Amalek wants that type, you know, he wants that schism. And that's why when Am Yisrael declared a schism, Amalek came. Then, immediately after that, Vayavo Amalek. They gave him a room to stand. Right? So now, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you cook this thing, you're going to eat it. Right? You decided, right, that Hishtadlus and Bitochen are irreconcilable. I'm going to make you juggle the two. At the same time, I'm going to make you, right? And that's exactly what happened in that first Muhammad with Amalek, right? They had to juggle two contradictory things, you know, contradictory in their own minds, right? Moshe Rabbeinu with the hands up, what does that represent? Surrendering everything to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My hands, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can do nothing, right? And Am Yisrael is supposed to see that, and like the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah, when they see Moshe with hands up, that Mishabim Libam Lavin Shabbat totally subjugate themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, total annulment of self. And with that, with the sword, do the best they can. That's it. That's what that because you said you drew a wedge between the Yesh and Ayin. You decided that the two cannot be both correct, right? No. I'm going to make you do it now. They had to carry a dual message. A guy in battle has to do his best and try to believe in himself and that he, you know. And yet at the same time, watch Moshe with his hands up, remind you it's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we're nothing. Yeah. You have to juggle those two at the time because that's the way you have to defeat Amalek, because Amalek is in that wedge. Right? That's where he is. You know, that's where the Yetzer Hara himself is, right? That's it. You know, the Yetzer Hara's, his ammunition, right, is to point out the different contradictions that there are, right? And say, you got to choose. Is it this or it's that? And when you choose one over the other, you're out of balance. And out of balance is always bad, right? It's interesting, you know, our biggest days of the year currently are Sukkot and Pesach, right? These are our two big chagim, and they come out in Nisan and Tishrei respectively, and these 2 months are the months of balance. Not too hot, not too cold. The days are generally exactly 12 hours long, equally weighted. Moon time, which is night time, and sun time, you know, 12 hours each. Balance. Right? Chodesh Av, bad month. It's an extreme. It's too hot. Days are too long. Right? What we have on the opposite end is Asara Beteves, too cold. Right? That's where that's, you know, when things are to the extreme and out of balance, that's bad. You know, because the very fact that you're making a schism in reality, that is what's bad. Schism. Right. That's why by we'll jump ahead. By no coincidence, right, when Esther takes a active role to now correct the situation. So she says, Lech Kenos, as Kol HaYehudim, convergence. And this was a countermeasure to what Haman said to Achashverosh, Yeshto Amechad Mefuzer Meforat, scattered. No, Amalek is Mefuzer Meforat, that's what they want. They want schism, because he thrives on the conflict between issues. You know, he thrives on conflict, you know, on doubts and schism between issues, and he needs, you know, Am Yisrael that pulls the pieces together. He needs them fractured. So Am Mefuzer Meforat. So Esther says, Lech Knosis Kol Yehudim. And that was during Pesach, as we know. Then by the actual Mulchama, right, on the 13th of Adar, the Megillah uses a term repeatedly, over and over again, Nikalu HaYehudim. You know, the verb, you know, the idea of banding together. Achtus. Right, but the achdus that there is in Klal Yisrael is not like the achdus that there is by other nations. And this is the secret always where Yisrael is called Goy Echad Ba'aretz, the one nation. Right? Because the achdus that there is in Klal Yisrael, you know, that we were 12 tribes, you know, by design 12 tribes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not, you know, he didn't let Egypt become a melting pot of the 12 tribes. You know, as when we left Egypt, the Yichus was established, you know, and 12 tribes, and they had their, each, you know, every group had their own degel. Because the 12 tribes of Israel connected the 12 months of the year. Kayadua. Right? So much connected, you know, the components of reality, and every Shevet has to have its place in the cosmos. Right, and the achdus that there is in Klal Yisrael is cosmic achdus, right? The tremendous tikkun that there is when we're ba'achdus is that, you know, the achdus that we have between us has a ripple effect on the whole cosmos. That all the different things in the cosmos that are running at different speeds come together. And that's why, you know, we spoke about Chodesh Av, the extreme month, or Bais Nechra, because of Sinas Chinam. Because that's the problem, you know, when Am Yisrael's not Ba'achdus, neither is the whole world. So as a result, the Beis HaMikdash, which is point center that holds everything together, gets destroyed, and we get scattered, dispersed. Right? So, the Gemara says, "Haman min haTorah minayin hamina eitz." Right? Where does Haman come from? You know, it's where's he alluded to? From Chet Eitz Hadas. Now we know that the Chet Eitz Hadas is what put the Yetzer Hara, you know, inside of us. It used to be externally manifest in the serpent, right? And then because of Chet Eitz Hadas, you know, the rock became internal. That's the Yetzer Hara that gives us doubts and you know, makes us look at life as full of contradictions, that's just the beginning of, you know, going into the fake idea that you have to choose one side over another, and that's what inevitably leads to bad choices, which are sins. All right, so you can understand with that what it means, Muhammad Hashem ba'amolek midor dor, right? Because the chet Adam HaRishon, right, is something that's only going to be fixed by all the generations combined. Because we're talking about uprooting the Yetzer Hara himself. Amalek, as opposed to the other nations of the world, right, is the Yetzer Hara himself. The other nations of the world, you know, they're not innately evil. You know, they, as we learned in Derech Hashem, you know, they may have come about kind of by accident, you know, because if Adam Rishon would have not eaten from Yetzer Hadas, all of humanity would be what we call today Jewish. Which is another reason why we're called Goy Echad Ba'aretz, the only one nation that was meant to exist. The others, you know, they came because humanity went down in level, you know, and when we went from Or, Kosnos Or, with an Aleph, Adam Rishon, originally his body was vestments of light. He went from Or with an Aleph to Or with an Ayin, you know, skin. So it says Rav Weizhaver, that's when, you know, if he would have remained at level that his body was pure light, it would have been Aleph, only one nation. Went down to Or with an Ayin, 70. That's why there are 70 nations. That is all the... But they're not bad people innately. You know, they have their issues. Right, they have their issues. And that's why we could be done with them, you know, once and for all in our history. They have their issue, whatever their issue was, and the issue gets resolved. Yeah. Right. But Amalek has a different role. Bilam says about Amalek, Rashis Goyim Amalek, he's the head of all nations, the first. I mean, he's an ideologue. He preaches evil. He preaches evil. And he doesn't have to be his own nation. You know? What type of passport did Haman carry? It's Persian. It's the Persian prime minister. Right? Just like Ilhan Omar has an American passport. Amalek doesn't have to belong to any particular nation. He could belong to any nation. Right? He'll switch sides and infest. Whenever you see an ideologue arise amongst the nations to, you know, incite against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, incite against the Jewish people, that's Amalek. And he could infiltrate any nation he wants. That's why you can't be done with him. He's not one type of person. He's not one nation. That's why the Torah expresses itself, the Ramchal explains. After the war with Amalek, it says, Timche Zecher Mocho, Emche Zecher Amalek. What is it called? Amalek. They're called Zecher. They're an idea. They don't have to be their own nation. They're a concept. It's a concept that they're like a virus that could spread from nation to nation. You know, he is a representation of the Yetzirah himself, and the Yetzirah always switches sides. Yetzirah sometimes plays, you know, extreme right, sometimes he plays extreme left, you know. And that's Amalek, you know, they've infested nation after nation after nation. Whenever you see a nation all of a sudden incited, you know, to just wholesale murder of the Jews, even at their own expense, right? That's the Amalek virus. That's the Zecher Amalek. And he'll ride whichever train is traveling faster. Whatever issue, whatever the hot issue is. Green New Deal, whatever it is. Whatever is hot, you know, that's what he rides. You know? He rides whatever's popular. Right? And he switches sides all the time, you know, so long as the sides are not working there. Because if all the sides in reality would be working together, they would all going in the same direction. Just for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just for Klai Yisrael, because things are not aligned, and it's in that misalignment that he thrives, right? And that's just and this alignment is the delicate balance that we of the path of halacha, right? It's try to pull the things together, right? And the days which are our greatest days of the year currently, you know, Tishrei and Nisan, these are times of the alignment, right? But it starts with understanding that all the different tracks are true, and the challenge is just to reconcile. When you think there's thesis and antithesis, right? So one is right and the other one's wrong, as if half of reality is wrong. That's apikorsis. That's like saying chas v'shalom shtei reshuyos, as if there's two domains, right? As if there's, you know, there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu and there's the whole sitra achra, as if the sitra achra is real. Sitra Achra is not real. Sitra Achra is an illusion, right? Who thrives in the perceived conflict and the misalignment of the different tracks in reality. So, and that's what Haman doesn't see. He sees always one side of the issue. Right? He'll see in Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu died then. He won't see the other side that he was also born then. So fish swallow. No, he doesn't see it's Dagim. Two sides of the issue, but in his mind, or what he wants to sell, is that at any given time, there's only one right way. Right? And by the way, if there's only one right way, you're going to choose the wrong way. Right? Because it's more fun, A. B, right, is that seemingly you can't lose. Why? Because Marshiva used to point out, You know, the everyone says, you know, crime doesn't pay and good will triumph at the end. You know, no one really believes that. I'll tell you why. Right? It's also not logical, right? Because the the good people, they have their rules, they have their red lines, they're not willing to cross. Right? The good can never use a civilian population as a human shield, for instance. Right? And if someone else is doing that, they don't have it in them to wholesale bomb them off the map. They don't. So what does the bad guy have to do? Right? All he has to do is take the confrontation over that red line. The good guy won't cross, and he wins. So why does good really win over evil? I just showed you it's impossible. Only because evil is not real. But if they would be equally real, evil would win all the time. Right, the message that the good triumphs over evil is really to say is a statement that everything exists really l'shem shemayim. Evil is not real. If it would be, we'd be dead. I just explained to you why. Right? But Amalek wants to see it that way. There's the good and there's the evil, and he wants you to see it that way. There's a schism in reality, and there's a good side and there's a bad side. And in that case, you'll always go with the bad side. You know, it's just a lot more fun. Right? That's it. Right, but it was, reality is dual, dagim, fish, multiple. Right? Reality has multiple tracks in it. It's not that the soul is good and the body is bad. The soul is good and the body is good. Right? It's double. Right? Double. Right? You just have to... train yourself. It's hard because the mind perceives that, we see the conflict of how these tracks run at different speeds and run in different directions. We got to juggle that they're both true, and you have to find a reconciliation. Right? The idea that that reality is fractured, that's an Amalek view of the world. Now we have to overcome that. Right? And when we overcome that, we don't just survive. We have double. You have the best of both. And that's what the Medrash Rabbah says. Velkim is kosher osa, v'ine tov mod. Shem saw it. First time it says tov mod in the Torah. Then it says, by the rest of my strength, I have velkim ki tov. Velkim ki tov. Right? Now it's all of a sudden tov mod. Right? So what's that tov mod? That's the end of all my sabreshes together. So says the Medrash Rabbah, tov ze yetzar tov. Tov ma'od ze yetzer hara. Tov ze gan eden. Tov ma'od ze gehenna. Right? Et cetera, it goes on. Everything, tov ze achayim, tov ma'od ze amisa. All the bad stuff is tov ma'od. What? Huh. Because, the tov is everything that's identified as good. When we get all these things that we call bad, when we harness that track also, so it gets added to the good. So the good is already good. The tov is already tov. So the added good is tov ma'od. And ma'od is also the osius adam, because that's man's challenge. Man's challenge is to make the reconciliation, right? And, pull the other track that seemingly we call that other track ra, right? Harness it and make it tov ma'od. And then you get kefil. Then you get double. Tov ma'od means you got double. You got the tov and you have the added thing that's called tov ma'od. A remez to this, is in the, famous medrash in Parshas Chayes Sarah. Rabbi Kiva was giving shir, and Talmidim were falling asleep, so he wanted to wake them up, so he threw them a riddle, right? He says, Esther reigned over 127 nations. Why? He says, come a great-granddaughter of Sarah that lived for 127 years and let her reign over 127 nations. Right? It's a medrash in Parshas Chayesar. So without getting into the whole depth of it, what happens in Parshas Chayesara? Right, we're taught a lesson. It was the first Leviah and Kvura and Hesped in recorded history. 2,000 years of world history had passed. You know, the Torah said, die, 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 die. That's all it says, right? For 2,000 years of world history, right? You know, so after 20 generations, right? So, yes, if I have a spoil the story of it, well, you know, for a dignified burial. First time the body was honored. First time a woman was honored. I don't want to, you know, whatever. Without getting overly liberal. But it's our first time, you know. In all 20 generations, it doesn't even mention the death of a single woman. Right? No, I don't want to fly off the handle on this. But the point is, right? And what happens? Our first Leviah, first has which final honors, final respects for the body. Used to be true, the body was supposed to be a piece of, you know, it was like your computer burns out and it goes in the garbage, you know? Yeah. First time, respect for a goof. And by no coincidence, you know, she was buried in Ma'oras HaMachpelah, Kefo. Double. And who's buried there? Zugos. Just couples. Double. Kefo's double and couples are buried there. The message came out in Chayesara, right, is, you know, that the body is holy also. You know, and the union between, you know, and if sun and moon, you know, also represent man and wife, right, the solar cycle, man, right, lunar cycle, feminine, right? The idea of the Kedusha of God, that the other side is just as holy as the first side, and the greatest good is in having the two together. You have to have that reconciliation and bring the two tracks in, not either or. And when you do that, then you have double good. Right? And that's what, you know, so Haman threw a pur, we called Purim. Right? He sees one side of the issue. He said, no, there's two sides. And when you see that there's two sides issue, and they're both true, he loses his place to stand in reality because he thrives on the rift. Because of Purim. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world in two ways. Ha'aras Panim and Hester Panim, and they're both true. They're both from God. You know, it runs at Ha'aras Panim, which is the track that everything spiritual and the Neshama is created from, and Hester Panim, which all Gashmias comes from, and they're both from him. They're both true. The Ha'aras Panim makes day, the Hester Panim makes night, where the moon reigns. And we have to learn how to pull them together. Right. And that's why Purim, you know, has to be double. The fight against Amalek is double, you know, because we have to close the rift that he thrives on. So now, what supplements from Moshe Rabbeinu in the ensuing Milchamas HaMolech for the rest of time? All right. So that's the role of Parsha Zohar. So now we have to read, you know, Parsha Zohar before Purim. You know, it's derived, I mean, biblically there's no set time for it. Minhag Yisrael became to read it before Purim. And it's word learned out of the Pasuk in the Megillah, Yarmel Niskarim V'Naasim, remembered and done, which by the way reflects the duality we're talking about. Niskarim, like Moshe with the hands up, reminding us everything's from Hashem. And Nasim, doing, with your own two hands, like Yoshua with the sword. Niskarim v'nasim. So we have to do the Zechira before the Asiya. Therefore, we have to have Parsha Zohar before we actually do the mitzvahs of Purim. Right? That's what's brought down in the poskim. You know, it all seems that this was derived, may even be post-Talmudic, this idea. But that's where it comes from. Right? So the question still remains, so why don't we do Parsha Zohar on Tanis Esther? That'll still be before Purim. Right?
Where does it say that?
It's in multiple places that term is used in Megillas Esther. Remember the Niskarim V'Nasim, Behold Dor V'Dor. It's towards the end, Perek Tes, you know, Ches Tes. Yeah. It's not in Yud. That's where it says Hashosh put taxes. He raised the taxes, like the Democrats. That's, that was in Perek Yud. Yeah. All right. So it says there's a medrash on those psukim of Parshas Zohar. It's a medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Kisetze, where it says that it points out an irony. You know, Shabbos and Amalek get equal treatment. Zohar is a Shachal Amalek. Zohar is Yom HaShabbos Lekacho. It's crazy. Right? So the medrash gives a mashal that a king, you know, laid out a table. He made a feast. Right? And the table's laid out with, you know, cold teeth. Right? You know, it's an unbelievable spread. All right, and before everyone digs in, yeah, so he says, Zohar Ploni Oavi, I want to take out a second to remember this guy who I like. All right, fine. All right, and then everyone gorges themselves, and you know, from the whole spread, Lo Nishar Zecher. It was Mamash Timcha Zecher. There was nothing left, no remnant of the food. So right before benching, you know, the king says, okay, 1 minute, Zohar Ploni Soni. I want to take out a second to remember this guy whose guts I hate. Right? So he asked him, Lezeis Karta Lezeis Karta. He gave them equal treatment. Took out a moment of silence to remember this one. You know, took out a moment of silence to remember that one. Said, no. This one was Al Shulchan Mole Kol Tuv. That's what I remembered on a table laden with all good. This other guy was on an empty table. So also says the Medrash on Shabbos, you know, Romanigas a Shabbos. Right? We have our tables laden with all good when we say Kiddush. Right? So, and we remember the Shabbos. Now, what's a table laden with all good means? Full, real, reality, right? And Amalek, we remember in context of Timcha Zecher Amalek. Remember him, you know, we're supposed to obliterate in that context, right? What does it mean? Oblivion, right? On Shabbos, you know, Shabbos, you know, supplements from Moshe Rabbeinu's role. That's why Zohar has to be on Shabbos, the Zechira that he did with his hands, that on Shabbos we remember everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He created heaven and earth. And the full table of Shabbos, the full table you're supposed to have the time when you say Kiddush, is remind you Shabbos is reality. It is what is. It's full. What is? Amalek, you're supposed to remember in context of is not. He's not real. He thrives on the perceived conflict between the different tracks in reality. So you have to see him for the nothing that he is. But you can only see him for the nothing that he is by the contrast of seeing reality for what it is. And that's Shabbos. That's Shabbos. And that's also what it means. In Medrash and Parshas Kisi, so on Shabbos, Moshe Rabbeinu gives us back the ksarim of Naaseh v'Nishma. Right, he gives us back the crowns that we lost when we got the crowns. We said Naaseh Nishma. Chedegah we lost. He gives us back those crowns on Shabbos. The idea of Naaseh before Nishma is hands over your head. I'll do, even before I hear, I'll do more than what I understand. That's like Moshe Rabbeinu's hands up. He gives us back those crowns on Shabbos. Right? Shabbos is what stands, you know, in place of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why Shabbos Zohar is like an integral part of Purim. The Muhammad Amalek is always fought on two levels. It's always fought with Emunah and Bitachon, and also with Hishtadlus, because we have to undo, right? We have to pull together, right? Pull together the schism, right? That, you know, the schism, the perceived schism in reality that he thrives on. So Parsha Zohar during Shabbos, why we're Kovei during Shabbos, because the Shabbos for Purim is a part of Purim. It's the Moshe Rabbeinu aspect with the hands up. Right, whereas Purim, of course, is the day that's connected to Yahushua. Right? And that's why there had to be 2 days of Purim. You know, Esther pushed for 2 days of Purim. The idea is that the doubleness of Purim is, you know, that the... Right, so it's the fact that it's about pulling the both tracks together, or the two different sides of reality together, the Horus Purim and the Hester Purim. But there's something about Purim that it was not just in, you know, for the present, it's for the sake of the future. Mucham al Hashem ba'amolek midor dor. As we said before, we quote the Chazal, Purim is the one holiday we're going to keep in the future, you know, like Yom Kippur. And we'll get back second, and we're almost done, right? But Purim, you know, is about the present, and it's also about the future, and that's why it's legitimate, right, to keep Purim, even though Amalek is still around, right? Because it's the power not just to get over him, you know, at the time, but it also builds it aligns the universe moving towards that great future, that Vahaya Orlovana Korachama, the end of time, right? The moon and the sun will be at the same, you know, same size and run at the same speed. And we're not going to have this schism in reality anymore. So when it says, Yinosin Gam Mochar LeYehudim, you know, in order to make it really Purim, that it's all about everything. So that means it, Purim has to also be about pushing the world forward, right, towards that time when all the tracks in reality are reconciled. So she said, Yinosin Gam Mochar LeYehudim. Right? Mochar, you know, is means the future. Like Hayom La Sosam Umochar Lekabo Schoram. Right? And they make Shushan Purim, you know, dependent on walls. Right? That's why I have to build the wall. Mukafchon and Moshe Yoshua Ben, walls are good. Right? Because the idea is like this. Right? They ask the Nochash, right? There's a Medrash. They asked the Nachash, Lama Tam Motzei Ben Agderes. You know, it seems that under fences where you find snakes. They said, Ani Paratzti Gidro Shel Olam, because I'm the one who broke the wall, the cosmic wall. Right, because he brought it, made us do the Chet Eitz Hadas, which brought the Eitz Sahara in. And the Eitz Sahara is what, in our skulls, is what gives us doubts. And whenever there's like a little bit of a question, you know, of how to reconcile something, you know, he jumps into that doubt, and he widens the rift and gets us to do things we later regret, right? That's called that the wall was broken. The wall held everything together, unified, right? Shushan Purim is the Shushan of the, is the Purim of the future, right? Because Milchama LaHashem Ba'amalek Midor Dor. It's a generation-to-generation battle, so Purim had to have something about the present. That's Purim, the present, and for the sake of the future, when the cosmic wall will be rebuilt. But now you understand, you know, that, you know, these two chagim, you know, which are big days of reconciliation, and when there's reconciliation, right? So the evil, you know, has no place to stand. So regarding Yom Kippur, we know there's no Yetzer on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says Ha-Satan is Gematria 364, like this, but the solar cycle's 365. So the Gemara says there's one day the Yetzer doesn't work, Yom Kippur. That's we're on the 65th day. Which is what we said. That's when the solar cycle completes its revolution and catches up to the lunar cycle. It's next year. 365th day is Yom Kippur, right? And that's where the gap is closed. Right? And all the 10 days in between, we're doing, those are the Aser Simei Tshuva, doing tshuva for all the failures that resulted because of the rift. Right? Right. So on Yom Kippur, the gaps are closed. And that's why on Yom Kippur, it could be a day of an extreme, and it's not bad. It's not bad, because when the two tracks are firmly closed, so if you have a little bit of fun, spiritual fun, right, and you go to the extreme of Yom Kippur, it's, you know, if you're not too hungry and if you're not too tired, it's a great day. It's not the pshat, so you go off to the direction of the spirit and you leave the body behind. Right? No, the body follows, because they're perfectly reconciled. So the body enjoys, you know, the trip, the adventure. And the same thing happens on Purim, right? The great reconciliation, right? That the rift that is Ra, that's between the tracks, is resolved. So, you know, it's a day of the body. You don't leave the spirit behind. Spirit goes with you. Now you could have extreme good because the two tracks are in perfect state, that they don't separate. So one enjoys a vacation in the one's turf, one enjoys vacation in the other one's turf. And that way, you know, that's the depth of what the Gaon says. In the big picture, it's a balance. These are 2 days of extreme. In the big picture, it's the balance because, of course, all parts of reality are equally true and equally right. Right? And that's what we mean. So it's one day. So Yom Kippur could be a day kulo LaHashem, and that's also called good. It's not a violation of, you know, it's not called punishing the body. Right? And Purim could be a day kulo LaHashem, and it's not called punishing the spirit. Because on these days, the two tracks are in perfect unity. They go together, and one follows the other to the other one's turf. Right, and that's what's so special about Purim in general, but Purim during a leap year, right? During leap year, which is it's all about balancing these two cycles, right? Balancing the two cycles, you know, is what the function of leap year, and that's what, you know. So Adar, you know, Haman thought, it's the furthest month away from Nisan, which was our strong month. We're toast. And so, and that's the irony. Adar is the month that bounces out and gets us back to Nisan, not just on the calendar, but also, you know, keeps Nisan in the spring. Adar restores the balance. And it restores the balance by being doubled. Understanding the two Adars, Dagim, the two Adars, the Dagim, understanding that all sides to the issue are all equally true. It's just our job to balance them, and the conflict between them is only perceived and not real, and we have to overcome that perception to beat Amalek. Okay, thank you very much.